How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. As always, you can take us on the go with that ESPN Chicago app. Tyler Aki and Mike Gilligan talking all things Masters with you. We'll be joined by Eric Ciotti at 10:35. Talk a little bit about the Big Ten Women's Golf Championships, but also get his thoughts on the Masters. Three of us were all texting during that Sunday in particular. We were texting a lot throughout the tournament, but that Sunday, I mean, boy, just the final, what, like, 2 hours, 90 minutes or so of that tournament. And I'm sure a lot of, you know, what's funny is whenever you're watching a golf tournament and you're like in a group chat with friends, it's just guys sending names to each other.
Yes.
Like it's just Rory. Ludwig.
Yeah. Rory, Flames.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's what it is. It's people sending names to each other over for the course of like an hour or so when you're down the stretch of these golf tournaments. But I thought, and we were just talking with Paulie, who called in, and if you have a Masters thought, 312-332-3776, he talked about the television side of things, and obviously it's different with the Masters because it's a product that's controlled by Augusta National.
And deliberately so in the rights fees.
Yes.
So that they can control TV.
Right. You're not paying through the nose like you are for an NFL game.
Correct.
Or for an NBA playoff series or anything like that. It is a product that is controlled by the tournament itself, which for consumers, awesome.
Mm-hmm.
For you and I, it's great. And Paulie brought it up too. You're getting golf shots all the time. It is boom, 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 boom. Unlike some of the stuff that you see on your traditional Saturdays and Sundays where you get the playing through and stuff like that. I think it's frustrating for people because golf is, and again, none of us are playing at the level that these guys are, obviously, but golf is one of the few things where as an adult, you watch it and you can learn something. You can take something, translate it to your game. Oh, I should put the ball here when I'm in this situation. If you and I are watching a baseball game, we're not taking anything away from that.
No, I mean,
unless you're coaching or something like that, like you're not, you and I aren't taking away. We've got the replay of the Cubs game on from yesterday. Caleb Thielbar just came in. We're not taking away anything from his pitching mechanics here.
No, the only thing I might do is act like Michael Tucker when I get my wiffle ball bat in the backyard.
Right.
But that's about the only.
It is one of those things where you can actually still learn something, and when you go with the split screen or when you minimize one shot for an advertisement that's running simultaneously with the action on the course, it's frustrating. And I will say the one thing that I think frustrates people about Masters coverage is we don't get main feed coverage until 1 o'clock on the 4 days.
Right.
I mean, you get the featured groups, some featured holes and stuff like that. You're paying for it. You're paying for the ESPN Plus or Paramount Plus or whatever. But you don't get just a main feed, which I think a lot of people would like. Take me to this shot, to this shot, to this shot, to this shot, and spray across the entire golf course as opposed to, all right, I'm watching the Schauffele and Spieth featured group. Or I'm watching Amen Corner, or I'm watching 4, 5, and 6. It feels like it's a little too selective there. Now, I get they've got the Masters app. You can see every single shot from this golf tournament. But that, to me, then it becomes a mobile adventure. You can really only do that on your phone or on your computer at that point. I want to watch it on my television.
Right.
And that's probably my one qualm with it. But the ratings were through the roof for this thing. It peaked at 19.5 million, which, for context, that is about where CBS hits for an average NFL game. If you're talking about a golf tournament, and I get it's peak versus average, but if you're in the same breath as the NFL, you're doing something right.
yes, you are.
So I think that was great for it. But the average number of viewers for Sunday, the final round, 12.7. It's the highest it's been since 2018.
That's fantastic.
And especially after what we saw last year. I mean, this is up about 33% from what we saw last year from the ratings, because it was sub 10. And usually the Masters, you want to be around like 10, 10 and a half, 11. And I think the golf world is happy with that. To go sub 10 last year for a budding star's second green jacket was very disappointing for the golf community. And to see it spike back up to almost 13 for your average viewers for Sunday is a home run. And you take that and run to the bank with it.
1,000%. And what we didn't even mention throughout all of this was Tiger wasn't a part of it.
Yeah.
And it's almost one of those things where we actually accomplished something without having a Tiger effect. Mm-hmm. And that's healthy for us.
Yeah.
And I think that's great for the game going forward. Not that I don't want to have Tiger back in the mix. Love to have him in the mix. If he would have been in the mix on this thing, we'd be challenging maybe some Super Bowl numbers, maybe not the biggest Super Bowls, but it would have been huge. But to your point on TV, you know, the Masters, if they can't do it right, they just don't do it. And I think we heard that from Andy. But the telecast, there is no better way to watch a telecast than the way the Masters and CBS delivers. And having the chance to have gone there and watch the devastation of what happened with that hurricane and the number of trees lost, people at home, you did not get that idea. And I noticed that they did not show certain views that you traditionally would get from previous years, because Augusta Country Club in the back is ultra exposed. And you never got that feeling watching them play 12 or 13 or even 11 for that matter. So you could tell, having been there, that the Augusta National gave CBS direct orders on how they want certain angles and photos and camera shots very tight. And that was very apparent. Now, when you get into the commercial part of it, I agree with Paulie. It gets very frustrating, because what I found during the Masters, like, if I had to go use the restroom for a second, when's a good time?
Yeah.
Can we put this? We were literally having to put it on hold. Mm-hmm. And so we were a little bit behind. And I love having to do that, because otherwise a PGA Tour, it's so simple. They put up that split screen. Yeah. It's time to go get a sandwich, time to go check on bodies and kids, mm-hmm. and make sure the house is okay,
yeah.
and then come back.
Right.
But it's not at Augusta.
Yeah. What is it? Is it the final 2 hours, or is it 90 minutes that is completely uninterrupted?
Yes.
And that is done intentionally. And I thought Jim Nance was fantastic. I thought they put on an absolute clinic on how to put together a golf telecast, because every year the Masters is the best because it is controlled by the tournament and Augusta National, and it is made like consumer conscious. Clearly, it is a consumer conscious product, and like you said, you can't leave. Unless this thing's a blowout down the stretch, like, you can't really leave. And it looked like this was a blowout at one point. Like, once Rory flipped the second nine with Bryson, he had a 5-stroke lead. It looked like this thing was over at that point. And then all of a sudden, things came unraveled a little bit. But I thought everything about the television product this year was fantastic.
I did too. And I thought Jim Nance equally did a fantastic job, like he always does. He is synonymous with this event, and I'm glad he's going to be in that position for years to come. But, yeah, you're right. CBS does it better than anybody, and, you know, and it's amazing. They've had a one-year contract since, I think, sometime in the 50s or 60s, and it's renewed every year. So what's that tell you?
Yeah, they're getting the job done. No doubt about that. How about you? How do you feel about the especially Thursday, Friday coverage of the tournament? Because, like, it almost feels like, to me, when this thing opens up on Thursday, it's got like an NCAA tournament feel to me, where it's like, all right, I just want to watch golf all day.
Right.
I want to, once I wake up, boom, I'm turning it on and I'm my eyes aren't leaving the television for the rest of the day. But it feels like it is difficult when it's not on traditional TV. And I get that sports in general and television in general is moving towards a streaming. Everything's going the way of streaming
right
now. But it would be nice, and I'm fine with it being on streaming. That's not my issue. My issue with it is that you're not getting that traditional main feed type of coverage that I feel like every sport deserves, and especially when you're talking about, in the world of golf, your biggest event of the year.
I would agree. But yeah, the streaming is the way of the future. And for those that are at the office and, you know, trying to, you know, get their masters, you know, eyeballs and impressions and, you know, views, it's convenient from that perspective. I do wish they would loosen the reins, but you also have to remember, Tyler, there was a time that we didn't even get to see one hole on the front nine.
Yeah.
And it was only back nine coverage only. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to say they've come a long way, baby, is somewhat true, but they still have a ways to go, I think. And, you know, and I think it's like letting the toothpaste out of the tube. Once they give that to us, they can't take it back.
Yeah.
So I think it's less is more in their eyes, I think, a little bit. But
it is Augusta. They can do
Augusta.
Whatever they want to do.
And that's true. And that is extremely true. Mm-hmm. But, it's such a unique entity, property, iconic event that there's just simply nothing else like it in the world. And it's, unless you've been there and have seen it and experienced it, it's just so hard to describe.
Yeah. It did go to the playoff. We got our first playoff since 2017. And I want to know, what were your thoughts leading into that? I thought, speaking of the television stuff, the way that they showed CBS showed Rose's birdie on 18, tremendous.
Yes.
When you see the roar of the crowd in the background, I mean, it was a clutch putt, too.
It was.
He knew he needed every stroke possible. If you ask Justin Rose when he's walking off of 18, do you think 11 under is good enough to get you to a playoff? He probably would have said no.
Right.
But then the way that Rory unraveled down the stretch, he misses his putt on 18. But what were your thoughts going into the playoff?
Well, the putt didn't surprise me, actually. The wedge is what surprised me. He's in the middle. He's got gap wedge. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to massage it. He can go hit it full, and he just leaves it open, just like he did at 13. And when that happened, I thought, oh, no, the moment has finally become too big for him. And he's going to become his own worst enemy here. Yeah. Now, he hit a great bunker shot. But I said to my wife, I don't think he makes it. I think we're heading to a playoff. And sure enough, he missed it. And I thought, oh, no. That putt, how he left it in the bunker, all of that does not bode well for a guy who now has to walk into a playoff, dig down as deep inside that he's ever done in his human life. Mm-hmm. Because when I looked at his face when he missed that putt, so many things went through his mind in a flash, but I immediately saw him become resilient. The tenacity, the tenaciousness, and the resolve that he had to go back up, hug his daughter. I think that was the best thing he could have done. It gave him a sense of reality. Life is going to be okay. He got a chance to just do that. And I think that actually calmed him in a weird, odd way. But I honestly thought Justin Rose was going to come on top because of how it unraveled for Rory and how it came together for Justin Rose. And I just figured he had the momentum going in, 44 years old, an established Ryder Cupper, has played with Rory, has probably mentored Rory, and was going to give the man a final lesson.
Yeah.
But it didn't come out that way.
No, it didn't. Well, and the other thing, too, heading into the playoff was one guy's putter was on, the other guy's was not.
Correct.
And Rory, I mean, it was flashbacks to Pinehurst from a year ago.
That's what went through my mind.
And it was just so funny that it was him and Bryson in that group together the whole time. And meanwhile, on the other side, you've got Justin Rose, who it felt like couldn't miss on the greens. He's hitting the clutch putts. Like, Rory could have ran away with this thing. Couple putts here or there. We talked about the one on 15 where he's got the eagle putt there. He has a chance to probably put this thing away, and he can't get the job done. Then he gets to 18. He's got a putt for par and for the tournament. He can't get the job done. And on the other side, you have Justin Rose, who's rolling birdies left and right. I mean, he carded 6 birdies. Mm-hmm. He had some bogeys mixed in there, too. But he's sinking putts left and right, and it was just like, boy, they're going to get to a playoff. They're going to be lying the same thing on the green, and Rose is going to hit his putt, and Rory's not going to hit his. And lo and behold, it was the inverse of that. Rory sank a hell of a putt.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a hell of an approach, too, but he hit the putt to win it. And Rose, it was a difficult putt, but it's like the way that he's been putting all day, he could hit this one and really put the heat on Rory. And I'll say this, if Justin Rose hit that putt, hit the birdie putt on 18 in the playoff, if he hits that putt, I don't think Rory hits his. I think the moment becomes way too big for him, and he's playing defense at that point, and I don't think it would have suited him well.
Absolutely agree, because when he missed it, I said it's over. He's going to make it now. Mm-hmm. Rory won't miss this. And what's even more amazing, when you really take a step back and really take a look at the 4 rounds that Justin Rose put together, if he shoots 71 on Saturday instead of 75, he finishes at 15 under the number you and I actually called.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed that everybody had that one round. But his first round of 65 and his final round of 66, it's just the 2 rounds in the middle kind of stood in the way a little bit from him getting his green jacket. But I also think in retrospect, having to face Justin Rose was a good thing versus, say, Bryson or Patrick Reed in a playoff. Because then I think another emotion comes into it and starting to force it and trying to win it for something else other than yourself.
You know what? I would actually throw Ludwig in there, too, because then it feels like, the game's passed me by moment.
That's a good point, too. But by having Justin Rose, a Ryder Cup teammate, somebody that he knows, there was a certain level of comfort, I think, with Rory in that playoff. Yeah. Knowing he had his hands full with Justin, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I think if there were other personalities in that playoff with him, I think the playoff has a tremendously different outcome.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with you. And even with Rose, I think there's a universe where it has a different outcome in there as well. All right, when we come back, let's take a look at what's taking place at the RBC Heritage. We'll head down to Harbortown when we return, and I do want to give you my pick for my way too early pick for the PGAs as well, because it's someone that's making a little bit of noise out at Harbortown. Okay. All that and more coming up next. This segment has been brought to you by Geneva National.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app. Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Segment brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club, a pure golf experience. Let's head on down to Hilton Head, where the RBC Heritage is taking place. Justin Thomas, your leader, after firing a 61 on Thursday.
Yeah.
How about that? Followed it up with a 69 on Friday. He is your leader at 12 under. Siwoo Kim, Russell Henley at 10 under. Andrew Novak, Tommy Fleetwood, three strokes off the lead. Mackenzie Hughes, Scotty Scheffler in the mix as well. They're four off. And then you've got, to round out the top 10, a good little group in here with Wyndham Clark, JT Poston, Brian Harman, Colin Morikawa, and Mav McNealy. So solid leaderboard.
Very solid.
And certainly for an event coming out of the Masters, something that I think the PGA Tour pretty happy with. And I'd imagine you probably see a little bit of Scotty fireworks today. He'll work his way hovering around that top three, and then Sunday's anyone's game.
Yeah, and you know something? Justin Thomas ceases to amaze me. Do you know that was his 14th time in his career that he has shot better than 62?
That's incredible.
That guy, when he gets on a heater, he goes, and his iron play is so scary good at times. And then, you know, he follows it up with things weren't going his way yesterday. He still shot 69. So I look for Justin to do some big things. Good to see him playing good like this. The game is better when Justin Thomas plays well.
And that is why he is my pick for the PGA Championship.
And that's a good pick, actually.
He's going to Quail Hollow. He's already won a PGA Championship there. He's performed very well at a President's Cup there. And I just feel like, you know, we think back to the Justin Thomas from 2 years ago when it was a Ryder Cup year, and it looked like there was a chance he wasn't going to make the team. If you go off of merit, he should probably, from what that season was, probably shouldn't have been on the team. But the history would say put him on the team, and he gets on the team, does a fantastic job, was a big reason why the Americans even had a chance to begin with. But I think that last year was all right, we're going to get back into the swing of things type of year, and I think this year could be a return to winning type of year for Justin Thomas, and I think the course sets up well for him, and I just think overall, like, his game's in a spot where he can win.
Yeah, you know, you look at, you know, the class of guys that he hangs around with, the Rickies and Jordan Spieths of the world. They've all kind of grown up together, right? And so they've all gotten married, and they're starting to have their kids. Mm-hmm. But I think Justin's the guy that's figuring it out first on how to balance family life, being a father, being a husband, but still being one of the world's greatest players, but also a corporate ambassador of sorts, because he is decorated by a ton of different companies. So all of those, you know, responsibilities that come along with it. And I think it's just a part of that overall maturation process of being a golf professional. And I think Justin Thomas is basically coming into the area of his career that will now be his peak. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he goes on a run and secures a few majors between now and the next few years.
Yeah. I mean, this could be the rounding into form for him. You figure he features prominently with the Ryder Cup team this year when they go out to Bethpage. Like, everything about what he's done over the last year and change, I mean, it's a completely different guy from what we saw in 2023. Completely. I mean, that was a guy who was outside the top 75 on tour. And he was playing the worst golf of his career.
And I think his mind was scrambled. I think life was just difficult for him. And I think he's been able to get himself back to where he was mentally so he can concentrate on the game and get the swing coach and the overanalysis leading to paralysis issue. So I think there were just a lot of voices, a lot of opinions in his head. And, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, they have to make the decision for what is best for their game, given what they know of themselves. And that's not the easiest thing to do as an athlete. Sometimes you have to make decisions that aren't favorable, even within your own mind. But you know that's what has to be done. And I think Justin's done a great job coming back, fighting his way back to being the accomplished player that we all know that he can be. And I'll tell you, if I had to select a player out there on tour to save my life with one round, he's going to be a guy I'm going to consider, because he plays best when his back is up against a wall and all guns are pointing at him. That's when he thrives. So pressure, Justin Thomas, bring it on. He thrives on it.
And his highs are as high as anyone on tour. I mean, when he's at his best and Scotty's at his best, it can be neck and neck. It's just we see Scotty at his best more frequently. But at his best, he's as good as anybody in the world.
Oh, yes. And for as small a stature as he is physically, he plays a game like he's a giant at times. Mm-hmm. And it is so impressive to watch. I could watch Justin Thomas hit irons all day long. His iron play is so fun to watch. Mm-hmm.
Agreed. All right, when we come back, we'll talk with Eric Ciotti, all things about the Big Ten Women's Golf Championships taking place right now, and we'll get his thoughts on the Masters and everything else. All that coming up when we return. This segment's been brought to you by Cog Hill.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Republic Bank, Tyler Aki and Mike Gilligan. We talk golf with you every single Saturday right here on ESPN Chicago. Let's head on out now to the Jersey Mike's hotline. Jersey Mike's a sub above, BTN's on-air golf analyst, former Northwestern Wildcat, and the CDGA's Director of Member Services Development. Eric Ciotti joins us. And Eric Boyd, we have plenty to get to today. We will get to all of your Masters thoughts, but first, you are on the call for the Big Ten Women's Golf Championships taking place right now, and I see a little bit of movement as Illinois has leapfrogged ahead of Oregon. But just how odd is it to see some of these teams out there? You got Oregon, you've got Washington, you've got USC, you've got UCLA. I mean, it is. All of these new teams, Big Ten expansion and college sports expansion, golf is no different.
Well, first of all, good morning to you both. Great to talk golf. April is fast becoming one of my favorite months between the Masters and being able to call golf for BTN for the women's and men's Big Ten championships. So just really excited to be part of it the next couple weekends. And yeah, it's been another great weekend of the golf here at Bully Rock in Maryland. They've been fantastic hosts. And, you know, I think what's so interesting is, you know, having these four new teams in the Big Ten Conference from the West Coast, it's really provided kind of a jolt of energy into, you know, this championship and just the feeling around college golf in general. I mean, you brought in, you know, three of the top four teams in the national championship semifinal last year. I mean, we're talking USC, UCLA, and Oregon were all had a chance to win a national championship last year. So to bring those teams in, I mean, you're seeing it. There's a ton of talent. You know, this year for the Augusta National Women's Amateur, there were 12 women that played that, you know, are a part of a Big Ten school. So the level of play is definitely elevated, and you can kind of feel it and see it with some of the coaches and some of the players, and it's cool to be a part of.
Well, Eric, yeah, you mentioned the fact that new energy's been, you know, pumped into this Big Ten, and immediately when we look, Oregon, yeah, up on top, but Illinois just recently, I guess, just took a lead, but the two teams you just mentioned, I noticed, don't travel too well out east in Southern Cal and UCLA. You know, being the number 7 and 27th team in the country, they're sitting at, what, you know, 8-9 right now in the Big Ten Championship.
Yeah, I'm pretty surprised. I mean, Southern California has a number of talented players. I mean, Catherine Park was top 5 in the ANWA this year, and they've got, you know, several other players that played in that event. So I'm surprised, you know, UCLA was another team that was a national finalist last year, you know, lost to Stanford in the final match. So I think, you know, there's certainly a level of disappointment with the way they've played. But, you know, I look at Oregon, I mean, top to bottom, I think they're probably, if not, you know, the class of the Big Ten, and I think they're showing it. You know, they actually have a player that they brought who's injured, who's one of their top players. They brought her on the hopes that she's got a back injury. They're hoping that she would be able to give it a go, but she's on site, but just hasn't been able to make it happen. But they're a deep team, and, you know, their coach, Derek Radley, has a ton of experience. He was an LPGA Tour caddy for a number of years, and, you know, I think really talks strategy, you know, with his players quite a bit in terms of where to position the golf ball, how to play the golf course, how to attack it in certain spots. So I think they have good leadership, and I think based on what I'm seeing so far, you know, they're going to be a factor come tomorrow afternoon for sure.
Eric Ciotti with us here on the Jersey Mike's Hotline as we talk things, all things Big Ten golf, and we'll get to some of his Masters thoughts as well. You know, thinking about some of the conference expansion, when you bring in an Oregon, a Washington, the two out of California as well, has there been talk about moving this event, the Big Ten Championships, both men's and women's, out to the West Coast? Because, I mean, you think about some of the areas that you've now opened up, California, the Pacific Northwest, there's some tremendous tracks out there that you could play this event at.
Yes, I would expect the championships to be out west, both the men's and the women's, sooner rather than later. And that's just kind of a matter of fairness. I mean, I know it's going to be tough for some of these Midwest schools, in particular the East Coast school, to travel back and forth. You know, coming home on Sunday night after a championship, flying from California is quite a bear. But I think that's just naturally how it has to go. So, but you're right, Tyler. I mean, you open yourself up to a number of different possibilities with venues, better weather, you know, better travel conditions. You know, obviously we want this championship to be in good weather where it looks good on TV and everyone seems like they're having a good experience. So I would expect it to be on the West Coast, you know, like I said, sooner rather than later.
So Eric, in your opinion, by bringing these schools in from the West Coast and the caliber of play that they bring to that, does this help programs like Nebraska, Washington, Indiana, and Maryland, who aren't necessarily your household names in golf, let alone women's golf?
Yeah, I think it elevates the play across the board. And so I think the coaches are going to have to work even harder to recruit some of the best players and really try to make the players that they have, you know, even better. And, you know, golf is such an interesting sport because you can be a lightly recruited player and have an excellent college career. You can be a highly ranked junior player and not have a good career. It's just all part of its timing, right? So you just kind of have to wait and see. But I do think that there's going to be some more pressure on these coaches to start to recruit better and really develop the players that they have at a higher level to compete with the likes of USC and UCLA, because I fully expect them to be a contender to win this championship and to have successful seasons and continue to compete for national championships just like they've done the last 4, 5, 6 years.
Eric Ciotti's with us here as we talk all things golf. Let's transition now to the Masters, because we want all of your thoughts from what you saw on Sunday. So I'll start you with this. Where did
you have an extra hour, Tyler?
we can try to find one. But where does Sunday rank in terms of the best golf rounds of golf that you watched, the best like days of a tournament that you've watched?
I mean, I don't want to be prone to hyperbole, but it's certainly in the top two or three for me. And it's just one of those memorable rounds of golf and televised events that you just remember. I mean, Mike and I have talked about this, but if you ask me next year at this time, I can probably tell you every single shot that Rory hit for sure on the back nine and probably most of the entire round on Sunday. It was just every shot was just so crucial and so memorable. So I don't think I'm going to forget anything that transpired over those 4 or 5 hours anytime soon. You know, as far as living up to the hype, I mean, what more could you possibly want? I mean, I'm watching the Golf Channel and watching, you know, Brandel Chamblee and these guys on Wednesday night say they all think Rory's going to win, and here we are on Sunday, and he's, you know, in contention, winning, and you just like you just it was riveting television across the board.
So, in your opinion, now, Eric, where does Rory sit in among the greats of the game? Where would you rank him? You know, there's six guys that have now won the Slam. Where does he fit in your golf Mount Rushmore?
It's going to be interesting because, you know, he's said repeatedly that he's not going to play the Champions Tour. So, you know, we'll have to see where his career goes here for the next, you know, 10 or 15 years until he gets to the age of 50. But, I mean, it's so wild to me that he hasn't won a major since 2014. And we know he's been in contention year after year. It's not as if he just dropped off the planet. And, you know, I think about his longevity, too. Has he been injured? I can't remember a time that he's truly had an injury. So, yeah. You know, his best golf could be ahead of him. You know, he could certainly win. And now that he has no pressure, now that he's won all four majors, he can go out there and kind of freewheel it. And I will say, though, it is remarkable that year after year, knowing that he just needed the Masters to complete the Grand Slam, and it took him this long to get it done, and he did. I mean, that's got to be just a massive weight off of his shoulders. So I guess if you're asking where it stands, I would say it's a little bit of an incomplete thing, because we just need to see what happens over the next maybe 6 or 8 years.
What do you
but
go ahead.
I just, you know, I think it's amazing. And, you know, I'm sure Jay Monahan was smiling during the entire round on Sunday, knowing that his, you know, the face of the PGA Tour, we'll call it, was, you know, got it done. And the ratings obviously were, you know, through the roof, you know, highest ever in several years. So I'm sure he was pleased.
Absolutely. What do you think this does now for him for the rest of the year? Like, this opens him up, and we've talked about it, and we had Andy North talk about it with us about an hour ago, saying, like, all of these courses kind of tailored to his game. Like, if I had to ask you, how many more majors does he win for the rest of the year, what number are you giving it?
I mean, the over-under is probably 1.5, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he won another major. I do think probably the hardest one to win is going to be the Open Championship. You know, there's just so many unknowns in that particular event with weather and, you know, travel, and crazy things happen. You know, players might rise to the occasion and have some crazy little round. So I think that, in my opinion, that's the hardest one to win. But I think, you know, U.S. Open and PGA, he's, you know, certainly going to be in contention for those and have a chance to win.
So, Eric, what was your favorite moment of the 4 days of Augusta, and what was your biggest takeaway after watching the 4 days?
I think the moment that I probably won't forget is that towering hooking 7-iron on 15 from Rory on Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, the drama, you know, you just felt like there was just this silence for about 10 to 15 seconds while the ball was in the air. And then it lands perfectly on that front right portion of the green and kind of draws and rolls back up to the hole there. I mean, that was probably the most, you know, memorable moment for me.
You know what's funny, Eric, too? One of the shots that I feel like gets lost in the shuffle of all this, because there were so many dramatic Rory and Rose moments, especially on Sunday, especially in the final hour or two of the tournament. But Patrick Reed on 17, the eagle shot that he had, sinking one in from about 145 yards out, that could have really changed the tournament.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so many things there. And, you know, if he does that earlier in the round somehow, you know, we're maybe talking about a different story. But, yeah, the ups and downs. I mean, even, you know, Justin Rose making a couple bogeys in the back nine. You know, he bogeys 17, and Patrick Reed makes two. There's a three-shot swing there. Rory's still a couple holes back doing his thing on 13, whatever he was doing there for 86 yards. But, you know, one thing that I go back to is, yeah, I don't know how much you guys have talked about, you know, sort of Bryson and kind of where he went in that final round. But, you know, to me, I really think the turning point was the third hole on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, Rory makes an early double bogey on number one. Bryson takes a one-shot lead, and he steps up to the tee on number three and hits an iron down the fairway. Now, he ends up hitting it on the green and three-putting. Meanwhile, Rory hits a towering driver 30 yards to the green, pitches on, makes his birdie before Bryson had to putt his 6 or 8 footer for par. Bryson misses that, and I just felt like all of his momentum was gone. Yeah. So I was very surprised at that. I know Padraig Harrington weighed in on that, and you know, he was as shocked as anybody, but I just feel like that was the moment for Bryson that he could have really, you know, stepped on the gas there and said, I'm going to take this thing. And it sort of went against his entire personality. So I guess if I had asked Bryson one question, I would just ask him, was that always the strategy? Because you can't tell me that if he's standing on the third tee and he's two shots behind, there's no way he's hitting iron off that tee. He's absolutely going to hit the driver and pound that thing. So I think he was a little bit caught up in, oh my God, you know, I'm one shot ahead now, and, you know, maybe made a strategy play that, and for a guy like Bryson, who's so, you know, scientific and, you know, regimented about what he does, you know, to make that, you know, tactical error, I think was just really surprising.
You know, Eric, we were talking earlier about how this has been a Rory coaster of a fourth round. And I think a lot of people don't remember or reflect back on the shot at 9 that he hit. the one that he put up through the trees, and that could have derailed his entire round. And he ends up going from trying to make a par to making birdie, when that could have easily turned into something else before he hits that back nine. And I think what happened at nine had a big impact on making the, at least the roller coaster, go the right way to begin it before he started going up and down. But he,
well,
that
that's
shot
true. That was
nine,
that was actually on that was actually at hole number seven. He kind of hooked it in the trees, then he hit that one
or seven. Yes, you're right. Seven,
nine. You know, nine to me was another turning point. I mean, Rory hit a great drive. Bryson hit a good drive. They both hit it in their close. Rory putts first, makes his birdie. Bryson misses. So that was just another, you know, another instance where Rory had the opportunity to make a birdie and put some pressure, and he did. And he did that again on 10 and, you know, just kind of continued that. And I think it gave him the confidence to be like, look, I'm going to hit some of the best shots of my life here on the back nine. And we all know, we've seen it time and time again, guys shooting, you know, 3, 4, 5 under on the back nine on Sunday at Augusta. So, and I know his scorecard was bipolar, as Brandel Chamblee said on the Golf Channel afterwards. But I think he described it as one of the most bipolar rounds of golf he's ever seen. So we likely won't see a winner of Augusta with that kind of back nine scorecard on Sunday anytime soon. So another thing to let sink in.
Yeah, and to your point, anyone that goes plays bogey golf through Amen Corner on the final round and still wins, that's an anomaly in itself.
Yeah.
So.
No,
hard to believe.
You know what's funny is, like, we Mike and I said on the Saturday leading in to Sunday, like, 15 is probably going to win this thing. He's at 14 through 10, yeah. And I'm thinking, boy, we came up short here. This is going to be 17 or 18, and boy, right, we way overshot it. Eric, thanks
I
so much.
I think even if he's standing in the fairway on 13, 86 yards with a perfect angle, you're still thinking, yeah, you know, 17 or 18 is in play here. And then obviously, he had other plans. But, it's just going to be one of those memorable rounds. You know, you just got to be thankful that you're able to witness it.
Yeah, absolutely. Eric, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck on the call. And where can people watch?
So we've got some great news this year. So we're actually going to be televising this event live tomorrow on Big Ten Network.
Excellent.
So leave it on from 12 to 3 p.m. Central Time on Big Ten Network. Will Haskett, who's done some work for the Golf Channel, also for NBC Sports, is going to be doing play-by-play. Emma Carpenter, who is a former collegiate golfer at University of Minnesota and a Chicago area native out in DeKalb, is going to be doing the analyst work, and I am going to be doing some on-course commentary. So you'll hear me sprinkled in throughout the broadcast, calling some shots and talking about what's going on here on site.
The Emma Carpenter, who grew up at Kishwaukee Country Club. Yes.
Yeah, so it's going to be a great event. The Big Ten Conference has done another great job, and looking forward to a good day of weather and some good golf tomorrow.
Awesome. Well, appreciate the time, and best of luck on the call, and we'll be watching. Eric Ciotti with us here on the Jersey Mike's Hotline. Jersey Mike's a sub above. When we come back, we will whip around the CDGA, all that and more when we return.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Golf is on your mind and on the air right now. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Thanks to Hannah LaMotta for producing today's show. The segment brought to you by French Lick, as we will be heading down to French Lick.
Yes, we are.
A couple weeks from now. Have a good time down there for a CDGA event. But, Mike, what's going on around the CDGA?
Well, first and foremost, folks, I've got an update on our little contest. We had the CDGA Fantasy Golf Contest this past week. And because Bryson did not live up to what we thought he was going to do, once again, Tyler, you have beaten me. It was a great match.
Good
though.
Match between us.
Two shots at the final and just did us in. But I just gave you your four Jersey Mike sandwiches.
Thank you very much.
And, so we also had some folks who also beat Team Tour Edge. Adam Bartel from Wheaton picked up a new putter. And Linda McLaren from Crest Hill won the Team CDGA prize pack. And then, let's see, John Lieberitz from Naperville. Jerry. He won the dual logoed quarter zip and beating everybody. So the next CDGA Fantasy will be the PGA Championship. If you're not a CDGA member and you want to get involved in some of these games or come on a member trip like Tyler's going to join us in French Lick, go to cdga.org. $50 gets you your membership and index, as well as you become a part of a 112,000 golfing community. And then lastly, we give back to the game a lot at the CDGA. And in fact, again, this year, you and I are going to raise money for veterans and for the individuals with disability through our Better Through Birdies Golf Marathon on May 10th. So once again, we are trying to achieve an overall goal of 100,000. Our team goal is 5,000, and we're getting close to almost halfway there. So if you would like to make a contribution on behalf of Tyler and I, we're going to play 100 holes. And we're going to try to raise as much money and make as many birdies. You can either pledge by the birdie or just a flat rate sum. But no matter, even if it's a dollar, every single dollar counts. Go to cdga.org and click on Giving Back and go to Fundraising Events and go to the Better Through Birdies, and you'll see our team up there. And I want to say thank you to all of those who have already reached out and have given. But again, no donation is too small, so you do not have to give us big dollars. Just anything is appreciated, and our folks and our world is better through golf, and we are changing lives with your assistance. So
yes,
thank you very
much. Thank you to everyone who has already donated. All right, that's going to do it for us. We'll talk to you next week. Peggy and Dion coming up next. This segment has been brought to you by French Lick.